Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I am your host for this next hour, Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm here with engineer Aladdin Al-Kathiri. Thank you for joining us and listening in. We have a variety of interesting stuff to share with you for this next hour. There was a public discussion last night in Ames about the so-called Stand Your Ground law that was enacted in 2017. We'll share some sound bites from that panel discussion with you during this next hour. We have a new intern at KHOI, Trey, and he has started a new segment on Local Talk called Ames Untold. Today he focuses on an untold story of homelessness from the perspective of an Iowa State student. Mary Rankin, Sustainability Director for Iowa State University in the city of Ames, will be here to discuss the city's public art birdhouse competition. And I'm going to find out with you what that's about, because I don't know about the birdhouse competition either. It's Friday, so here is Mr. Dennis Hart with a summary of local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. Dennis?
Thanks very much. I hope everyone has had a great week. Here's what made news in Ames these past few days, starting with word that the public fundraising effort for the planned Healthy Life Center in Ames had fallen short. Organizers hoped to raise about $18 million, but a bit less than $6 million was raised in pledges. Now organizers of the plan to build the center have to decide whether to increase their own financial commitments or extend the fundraising effort or look for ways to reduce construction costs. That was reported last Friday. On Saturday came word that the president and CEO of the Verbio Corporation was in Nevada to take part in meetings about the company's work at the plant, which it bought from DuPont on the west edge of Nevada along the Lincoln Highway. Greg Northrup said the plant will become a renewable natural gas facility and that the gas will likely be sold in California, where it will be used in compression natural gas vehicles. Northrup said he expects the Nevada plant to be open for production early next year. He said about 40 employees would be on the job by the time the first phase of the plant is open, and more would be added as it expands. There was also word Saturday that the search was underway for a new events coordinator position after members of the Ames Main Street Board had voted to merge with the Ames Chamber of Commerce regarding its leadership position. That agreement involves the Ames Main Street Board still being able to control the activities and events it holds on Main Street, but having Ames Chamber employees lighten the workload normally done by the Ames Main Street Executive Director. Also Saturday, a preview of the first meeting of an educational entrepreneurship program called 1 Million Cups, which had branched out to Ames, with the first meeting set for this past Wednesday night. The 1 Million Cups program was developed by the Kauffman Foundation, an organization dedicated to helping entrepreneurs in their careers. The program typically has one or two speakers come in each week to talk about their business journeys and what they're doing now. On the first Wednesday of each month, the presentation will be in the maintenance shop at the Iowa State University Memorial Union. Every other Wednesday of the month, meetings will be at the Ames American Legion. On Sunday came word that Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds said she supports comprehensive immigration reform, and she expressed frustration over the inability of national leaders to find a compromise over the issue. Reynolds said the blame rests on both political parties. She said she believes a compromise could include restoring protections and certainty for students under the Deferred Action on Childhood Arrivals program, while doing more to secure the border. The governor also said she was disappointed by a Polk County judge's decision to overturn a law passed by the legislature last year that would ban abortions after a heartbeat is detected. She said she's working with her team on what their next step is. And the governor also said the time has perhaps come for someone else to represent Iowa's 4th congressional district. She said it's up to district voters to decide the future of Republican incumbent Steve King, who came under fire again last month with comments about white nationalism and white supremacy. Sunday also brought word about the Ames City Council, which got together in a goal-setting meeting on Saturday. Among the goals, finding out ways to reduce the length of council meetings, which have often gone on for 3 or 4 hours and which may be the longest in the state. Numerous ideas were floated. Council members also discussed progress that had been made on 7 goals laid out a year ago. Those goals were strengthening downtown and campus town, promoting economic development, extending sustainability efforts, addressing housing needs, promoting a sense of one community, strengthening human services, and encouraging healthy lifestyles. Also Sunday, a report that 2 Ames Figure Skating Club skaters had returned from the U.S. Figure Skating Nationals competition in Detroit. Jordan Gillette of Ames and Alexis Slack from Ankeny placed 11th in the intermediate pairs, and improved upon their previous high score by 2 points. They are the first Ames figure skating club skaters to compete at the Nationals. There was also a report about a new gluten-free bakery that had come to Boone. Juliana Starling opened the Nest Bakery after she had been forced to explore eating alternatives for her 6-year-old daughter, Nora, who has an allergy to wheat. One more note, just in case you missed it, Iowa State's men's basketball team defeated Texas 65-60 last Saturday, while the women's team defeated Kansas State 81-52. On Tuesday came word that SciRide will make changes to its routes and its timetables twice in upcoming months. One set of changes will take place this May, when commuters will experience alterations to SciRide's Peach, Plum, and Gold routes. Then in August, changes will affect the Brown, Cherry, Gold, and Lilac routes. The modifications stem from commuter feedback and from surveys taken last spring and fall. There was also a preview of this week's trio of special city council meetings in Ames, all of them designed to fine-tune the city's budget before next Tuesday's public input session. This past Tuesday's meeting tackled the city's utilities and transportation programs, along with the public library. Wednesday's meeting dealt with community housing, public safety, and parks and recreation. And yesterday's council session dealt with human resources, health insurance, and legal services. Next month, on March 5th, the council will adopt the budget for the fiscal year 2019-2020. Also Tuesday, a report that Nevada students, friends, and family are trying to financially help a Nevada middle school teacher who is in need of a double lung transplant. Karen Niblock has been approved for a transplant by the University of Iowa transplant team. There was also a report that February is American Heart Month and that the Go Red for Women campaign in Story County is in full swing. That's a 12-week heart challenge that began in the county in 2010, one in which participants take steps to improve their health. There was more on Tuesday, including a report that a new business is coming to Ames next month, one that is focused on spray tan services. It's called Bronze 515, and it will be one of just 3 stores in Iowa that solely provide spray tan services. It will be located on the first floor of the renovated Sheldon Munn Building at Main and Kellogg. And, of course, there was word about Iowa State University's men's basketball team's victory over Oklahoma on Monday night, 75-74. Wednesday brought word that the Story County Board of Supervisors had unanimously approved a draft of the county's capital improvement plans for public review and comment for fiscal year 2020. The public can comment on that plan from now to March 1st. Then the board will review those public comments and give staff directions for any revisions at the supervisors' March 5th meeting. The estimated cost for the new plan is nearly $5 million. Also at this past Tuesday's supervisors' meeting, the board received 3 bids to repair 2 plots of land on the Heart of Iowa Trail damaged by flooding last year. The board will receive a recommendation on which, if any, of the bids to accept at a future meeting. The board also heard word that over the past 12 months, the Ames Metropolitan Statistical Area saw an increase of as many as 600 jobs. In the past 18 months, 962 new jobs have been announced throughout Story County. And one more note from Tuesday's meeting, the supervisors approved adding 1 additional person to the Sheriff's Office Communications Division. Wednesday also brought a report that the new Menards Home Improvement store in Ames is on schedule to open later this spring, and that hiring is already underway for both full-time and part-time positions. The number of employees that will be hired was not released. Construction on the site on Southeast 16th Street started last August. Also Wednesday, a story about Tuesday's kickoff of the Ames Plan 2040, where residents were able to voice their opinions about such topics as parks and recreation, transportation, and economic development. Residents could speak with city representatives at 2 sessions at the public library. The next public input session will take place February 25th from 5 to 8 p.m. in the Economic Development Core facility at the ISU Research Park. For those unable to attend, the city has posted an online survey on the Ames Plan 2040 website, where feedback can be provided throughout this month and next. There was more on Wednesday, including word that the ag instructor and FFA advisor at Roland Story High School has been named a finalist for a major award. Brad Taylor learned on Tuesday that he's one of the finalists for the Nationwide Golden Owl Award. That's an award established by Nationwide, a major farm insurer, to honor the agriculture educator of the year. Taylor received a commemorative plaque and a prize of $500. He's one of 7 teachers from Iowa and 10 from Ohio who were chosen. One honoree from each state will win the grand prize, which is $3,000. Yesterday, Thursday, brought word that the Iowa Court of Appeals had overturned a judge's ruling in an air quality case involving Iowa State University. The case involved a lawsuit filed by Luann Huss, in which she claimed she was wrongfully terminated from her university job after she had complained about numerous health-related issues involving air quality in her office. A jury had decided in favor of the university, but a judge had overturned that verdict. Now the appeals court has said the judge who did that was wrong. Also yesterday, a report that the city of Ames ranks sixth among 42 Midwestern cities when it comes to entrepreneurship health. That ranking comes from a company based in Nebraska. Ames is the highest ranking city in Iowa. There was also word that Ames will host a free interactive animal disease prevention and response workshop next Tuesday, February 12th. The workshop will be presented by the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship and by the Iowa State University Center for Food Security and Public Health. It will take place at the Quality Inn and Suites on 13th Street in Ames starting at 9 o'clock Tuesday morning. And finally, yesterday's paper reported that Ames High students will perform the musical Fiddler on the Roof this weekend at the high school auditorium. Performances will take place tonight, Friday, and tomorrow night at 7:30, and then again Sunday afternoon at 2. And there you have it, our summary of the past week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, planning to take the weekend off, but promising to be right back here in this seat on Monday with a look at what happened around the state this week. Until then, stay safe and have a great weekend.
Vivaldi's Concerto No. 4 in F minor from The Four Seasons, otherwise known as Winter. Big nod to the big cold out there. This is Local Talk. I'm your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you, Mr. Hart, for the roundup of local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. Last night in Ames, there was a panel discussion to discuss the so-called Stand Your Ground law that was passed by the Iowa legislature in 2017. The discussion allowed for audience participation and was hosted by the League of Women Voters of Story County and co-hosted by the Carrie Chapman Catt Center at Iowa State University, and their new director, Karen Kedrowski, was the moderator for the discussion. The speakers on the panel included Wayne Clinton, past Story County Supervisor, Jessica Reynolds, Story County Attorney, Al Abdu Samad, who's a legislator and creator of Creative Visions in Des Moines, Commander Jeff Huff of the Ames City Police, and Lieutenant Nicholas Lenny from the Story County Sheriff's Office. So it was a mixture of lawmakers, law enforcers, and the county attorney. It was an intense and focused conversation for more than 90 minutes with many passionate as well as educational presentations. I learned a lot, and I want to share just a few sound bites from the event, what was said. Just a note, this is an edited version of the sound bites. This is not the exact order in which all these things were said, but it's just kind of a conflation of some of the statements to help you get a sense of what was said, explaining the law and also its consequences.
Stand Your Ground laws refers to Iowa's self-defense law. And that's found in Iowa Code Section 704. And the changes to Iowa's self-defense law took place July 1st of 2017. The law states that a person can use reasonable force if they believe it's necessary to defend the safety of themselves or others or to resist a forcible felony. Now, one particular part of the law that's interesting and something that we deal with in the justice system is that the person can be wrong about the amount of danger that they face as long as they have a reasonable belief that they're in danger. And someone who's not engaged in illegal activity has no duty to retreat before they lawfully use deadly force under the law. So if you are justified in using reasonable force against an aggressor in defense of yourself, another person, or property, you're immune from criminal or civil liability for all damages. And just as an aside, this law does not protect people who are engaged in illegal activity.
The whole idea of Stand Your Ground really comes from the Castle Doctrine, which basically means in your home, if someone is to come into your home, you have the right to respond and use force and whatever force is really necessary. Really what Stand Your Ground does is it takes that basic concept and applies it everywhere else as well. But just so you know, we have not in Ames had a case where Stand Your Ground has applied yet.
Stand Your Ground law is part of Iowa's self-defense law. So what it did was it changed self-defense law in Iowa. It used to be in Iowa that you had a duty to retreat if you could. So before you use deadly force on someone or reasonable force, if you were able to retreat, then you needed to do that. And now that's gone. You know, one of the things that that did was that that heightened the likelihood of confrontation, is how I would put it. It changed self-defense law in Iowa.
Many African Americans recognized already that they're at a decided disadvantage. First of all, to get legal counsel to represent them, where the likelihood that they're going to be able to prove that they truly were the victims and not necessarily and had justifiable means is very difficult. First of all, income is a part of the factor, and I think is something we need to recognize in the state of Iowa is the demographics. We're not going to have jury cases, if it ever goes to trial, where you're going to have a representative sample if you're a person of color. There's just not likelihood of being very many people in the jury pool that looks like you, which could make a difference. A white who commits the act of shooting a person of color is more likely to be exonerated than if it was the other way around.
We look at the laws. Florida have began to address, to change the law, Stand Your Own Ground law. Several other states have looked to change the law because they found out it was a racist law. Individuals with that kind of mindset was able to use it, you know, to their benefit, to shoot individuals that they feared. Now understand, Stand Your Own Ground is based on fear. You have to, if you fear, if you and I are walking in the park and you're walking ahead of me and I walk up behind you and you turn around and I have on a hoodie and my hoodie is black and maybe has some writing on the front and I have some music going and you feel fear for your life, that's what you have to prove to these officers, to the county attorney, that you feared your life. But I could be laying dead out of your fear. We're in a climate today where Stand Your Own Ground has been used for those who perpetuate fear, who perpetuate for in hate, that perpetuate division. Stand Your Own Ground was not created to protect Joe Sixpack. Was not created to protect individuals that are in the park at a picnic. It was not created to protect individuals just walking down the street. We're not talking about really the law. We're actually talking about a climate in America. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about laws are set up to protect innocent people, to give people their rights. But in a climate today, some laws are set up to take away rights. And that's sometimes that's the intention. Iowa has a law before the Stand Your Ground law. The law in Iowa was that you have a right to protect your business, you have a right to protect your home, you had the right to protect your person. If I'm not mistaken, that's the law. If it's not broke, why fix it? In Iowa, we got some of the best laws. We have some of the best laws to cover individuals and officers. These officers now and the county attorney have an extra burden to prove that an individual has so much fear in their life that they shot this individual. I just want to, a study that was done, it was concluded that the Stand Your Own Ground laws do not result in a decrease in crimes such as assault, rape, robbery, and have an effect of increasing homicide rates. If we lived in a country that had a level playing field, then we wouldn't be having this panel. You don't live in a country that has a level playing field. If there weren't so many disparities, if it weren't so many mindsets, and the way that we are conditioned, we would not have this panel, and we wouldn't be talking about Stand Your Own Ground because we wouldn't have needed it.
Few excerpts from a panel discussion held last night in Ames, sponsored by the League of Women Voters and co-sponsored by Carrie Chapman Catt Center at Iowa State University, about the Stand Your Ground law. You heard the voices of Lieutenant Nicholas Lenny from the Story County Sheriff's Office, Commander Jeff Huff from Ames Police, Al-Abdu Samad, who is a legislator and founder of Creative Visions, Jessica Reynolds, Story County Attorney, and Wayne Clinton, Path Story County Supervisor and Educator. We'll be airing an extended version of the panel discussion soon here on KHOI. Listen for it on Heart of Iowa, which airs on Thursday morning and covers extended conversations and recordings of issues affecting those of us living in central Iowa. Thank you, Sly. Really miss you. And if you've joined us, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today. And we have a new intern at KHOI. His name is Trey Moore. And we're liking him. He has started a new segment for Local Talk, and he calls it Ames Untold. He promises to open up new doors in our understanding with his segment. And he just did his first installment. He takes us out of our comfort zone with this installment with an untold story of homelessness from the perspective of an Iowa State student. Trey Moore.
KHOI, Ames Community Radio. KHOI. You are tuned in to Trey Moore here at KHOI Ames Community Radio. A relationship gone sour results in homelessness, and how the love from a pet cat was the saving grace of all this. This is Ames Untold. Today we have a guest. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi, my name is Preston Burris. I was homeless for about 3 months last summer of 2018. And I'm a student at Iowa State. I'm a senior right now.
So in the past, or before this experience, I guess, how did you view homelessness? Or what was your, you know, personal perceptions?
I thought of homelessness as a sad thing, something that is sort of staple of the society we live in, unfortunately. I work for the local tenants union, so I have interacted with a lot of homeless people and people who are in insecure housing. I've been in insecure housing before, but this was probably the most severe it got was over the summer.
And how about your peers? You guys ever have discussions about homelessness?
I didn't really talk with my friends about homelessness a whole lot outside of the work I did for the tenants union. I've had moments where, like, I've been homeless for a few days, and I've had to, friends have been very good about, like, taking me in and letting me stay on their couch. But other than that, homelessness wasn't really a topic we broached a lot.
Can you take us through how this all started?
Living with my partner at the time, and the relationship went south, and I needed a place to stay. I had about a week to figure it out. It was me, like 8 boxes of my stuff, medium-sized boxes, mostly books, and like a garbage bag full of clothes.
So 8 box of essentials.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I got a tip from a friend of mine that there was an apartment that was empty. I got a key to the place through a friend of mine, and I started squatting in this abandoned apartment. When I got there, the ceiling had collapsed through water damage from, like, a leaky air conditioner above the apartment. The ceiling was on the floor, like it was a caved-in apartment pretty much. Oh. Other than that, it was completely empty. I made a sort of a nest bed out of my bag of clothes and slept on the floor. And yeah, that
was. Could you go a little into detail about what your daily routine was?
So I would wake up, feed my cat, go to work, and then I would hang out at bars at night. I was kind of a bar fly for the summer. And I would get drunk probably more than is healthy to help me, like, go to sleep on the floor and just, you know, being sad about my predicament in general. Like, it wasn't exactly the healthiest summer, but I tried to cope, and maybe I didn't do a very good job of it.
So this affected you mentally, spiritually, physically?
I mean, absolutely. Like, I kind of felt like an insect, kind of. I didn't have a home, and the place I was living in was an empty dump. It was very difficult for me to sort of get out of this mental slump. Like I said, this happened because a relationship went south, so there's heartbreak involved as well. And
you got a lot of emotions going.
Yeah, it's like emotions about my living situation, emotions about the relationship ending, relationships about fear of, like, the future, where am I going to go after this, and just a lot of mixed feelings, a lot of drinking. It was hard for me to figure out a way out of it. The emotions caused me to freeze up and made it very difficult for me to get motivated to find a new place to live in the coming leasing term. It was actually my cat that really gave me the kick in the butt I needed to, like, start looking for a new place to live. I had money. I had a fair amount of money saved up, but I just had no place to go because the leasing term is very strict in Ames. It's very...
Can't get short-term leases?
No, no. You can find a subleaser if you're lucky, but I looked and there just was nothing. So I was kind of stuck being homeless until the new leasing period started. So yeah, it's something I knew wasn't going to be a permanent thing.
That makes your situation kind of interesting, because you had the funds to possibly get out of your situation, but because of how Ames Housing is set up, you couldn't
Yeah.
Get out of your situation.
Exactly. It was kind of just a systemic issue. I had the money. I was still eating pretty terribly because I had no transportation. Mm. My bike got stolen early on in the summer. So I would have to walk like half an hour to go to the grocery store. The stuff I ate was mostly like the food I could get nearby, which was like fast food. It impacted my health and it impacted a lot.
We spoke earlier and you said that you became a vegan during this time period.
Yeah, so because I like making life difficult on myself, I had been vegetarian for a couple years before, sort of around this time. Because of this, my situation, I was sort of doing a lot of introspection and like trying to figure out what I want to do with the rest of my life. A lot, large part of that was like just kind of doing things that I know I should be doing anyway. Mm-hmm. And one of those things is being vegan. I was vegetarian, but I was a guilty vegetarian.
You definitely had some cheat days.
No cheat days, but it's, I know that being vegetarian isn't the whole story. Mm. And so it's just sort of this, that thing where it's like, okay, I'm going to go all in on this. But the timing was really bad because that limited my food options even more. I've talked to friends who do a lot of work with eating disorders, and a lot of them became very concerned because a lot of people take on that sort of like very restrictive diet in situations where they feel like they don't have a lot of control, and it's a way for them to feel like they have control over something. Mm. So they were all worried that I was developing an eating disorder, and I had to be like, no, this is a long time coming. It's healthy. Maybe there's a bit of like, It did give me something to distract myself with.
Could we get, I guess, into the relationship with your pet? Because that was something that you said really helped you throughout this experience.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a really lonely summer for me. If it wasn't for my pet, I would have been alone in this apartment. Her name is Mo, my cat.
Mo.
And yeah, she's wonderful.
Shout out to Mo.
Yeah. So I spent most of the summer just hanging out with Mo and being drunk and not really doing a whole lot of anything. But I started to realize, well, Mo was having a hard time of it too. Like, she sort of went on a hunger strike because she wasn't happy with the place we were living either. It had a very negative impact on her. And once I saw how hard it was for her to be in the situation, I realized I needed to find a new home, if not for myself, then for her, because I wanted to make her comfortable. So that's kind of what got me to really take looking for a new apartment seriously, and it helped we get through that like sort of existential freeze up I was having.
How transparent were you with people? Was it mostly just close friends, or?
I didn't interact with a lot of people who weren't close friends around this time. Everyone sort of knew. I didn't really have anyone over, obviously, so they didn't really know what the place I was living in looked like. Mm-hmm. It's more of just like what you can come over and like see the how messed up everything is. It's not like I have board games or anything we can like play on the floor. So it was just sort of if we're gonna hang out, it's gonna be at someone else's place. I was too like just depressed to be ashamed of my situation, I guess.
How do you look back on this experience?
It was definitely a low point in my life. It's really made me appreciate whenever I have a place to settle, even though I definitely don't feel attached to places as much anymore because I do kind of feel more transient because of this experience. I still have, like, most of my stuff in boxes because I just kind of don't trust. Yeah, it's like I feel the need to be able to pack up all my stuff in my tiny car and just go at a moment's notice. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of an irrational feeling, but I don't really get attached to places anymore, but I am doubly grateful for any sort of comfort I can get in a place.
So has this changed your idea of home?
Yeah, for sure. Home is wherever my cat is. Home is wherever I can lay my head, but it's also not something that I really fall in love with in the same way I used to. It's like when I think about home, I'm no longer thinking about a specific place. I'm more of thinking of that feeling and trying to keep that feeling no matter where I'm at, because I know that those places are not something I can put a lot of stock in.
Hmm. Would you say you're a minimalist as far as living?
Yeah.
Resources that you found that you could share for people who may face insecurity?
Well, if I could put in a plug for my organization that I I help run the Ames Tenants Union. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of work with housing issues, and we want to start helping people who are homeless. We would love to be a resource for people to use. So plug for that. And then just preparing mentally, I would just recommend if you need to squat in an abandoned apartment, don't do it in one that's near a lot of bars, because that could get dicey.
Mm. Do you feel like this is a big thing at Iowa State University?
Oh, for sure. To varying degrees, I know that I'm definitely not the only person who's probably experienced being homeless for an extended period of time. But even just being homeless for a couple weeks is like an epidemic in Ames because of the way we do leasing. When leases end and when leases start, they don't overlap. And so
there's a lease gap.
Yeah,
correct.
And the lease gap can be up to like 3 weeks. During that time of year, I would say homelessness population in Ames rises drastically.
Mm.
I know very few people who haven't been affected by that and who haven't at least had to couch surf for a couple weeks because of it. The sort of larger, more homeless for months on end, I haven't personally gone to meet with anyone who's shared this experience, but I know how easy it is to fall into, and I have no doubt that it's a problem.
Thank you, Preston, for sharing that very, very personal tale with us. This is Trey Moore signing off at KHOI, Ames Community Radio Station, and that was Ames Untold.
Ames Untold, new segment for KHOI. Thank you, Trey Moore, and we're looking forward to see what happens next. Trey's a new intern at KHOI. He's at the Iowa State Greenlee School of Journalism, and we're glad to have him on the team. And this is Local Talk. I'm your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Mary Rankin is the Sustainability Director for Iowa State University and Ames. And Carrie Dixon is the Sustainability Coordinator of Design and Construction Services for Iowa State University and member of the City of Ames Public Art Commission. Wow, we've got some credentials in the room here.
Good morning.
Welcome to Local Talk. It's great to have you here and to have you back, Mary.
It's always a pleasure.
So you are going to start out by telling us about birdhouses.
Yes. Well, right. You know, it's a little chilly when you think about birdhouses and all of our birds starting to nest. However, what a great winter project that we could be working on as we're all having a bit of cabin fever. And Carrie, through her work with the Public Art Commission here in the city of Ames, is heading up a really cool project.
Thanks, Mary. The Public Arts Commission, about every 3 years, does a major parks art in the parks installation. And in the past, they have been the Inukshit installations in the park. So those are the stacked rock formations that have been put in. We did the two musical pieces that are down in Tom Evans Park. Those are the two that were done about 3 years ago. And this year, as we started looking at trying to do a public arts art in the park piece, we wanted to get the community really, really involved more than often. So we're working on basically it's a birdhouse project, and we're trying to get members of the Ames community, school kids, the high school, woodworkers, artists, architects involved in creating birdhouses that we'll be putting in Ames Public Parks. We're partnering with Keith Abraham and all of the Parks and Rec folks. We're hoping to display them along the large walking trail loop within Moore Memorial Park, out in some of the woods. We've got requests out for all kinds of birdhouses, so we'll get them placed where there's appropriate for the path of the type of birds they're going for. And so it's one of those, we're trying to kind of mesh a environmental sustainability piece with just getting some fun things out there.
So what kind of birdhouses are you visualizing? Anything?
Everything under the sun. We've got various competition areas that people can apply in. And from, you know, a birdhouse that's pretty much designed specifically for the bird but maybe artistically embellished on the outside to things that are very whimsical and never intended for a bird to ever live in but are just really, really cool to look at.
But, you know, a bird really may enjoy.
They may enjoy it, but, you know, we're looking for single
bird. What
bird
wouldn't want a palace? Come on.
Yeah, we're looking for single bird residences.
You know, I have to tell you that yesterday I was driving down Lincoln Way in West Ames, not out of town, in town, and there was a bald eagle sitting on the ground on the side of Lincoln Way watching traffic going by.
Well, those are huge.
And this was like a mature bald eagle. So I think that guy was looking for a birdhouse.
Yeah. I think he was looking
perhaps
for
an
a
occupant.
Snack. He was looking for a snack.
Like, I need a big house.
Having lived out over in that area town just north of the railroad tracks on Dakota, there are birds that would live up along that Onion Creek. We had at least one, if not a mating pair of eagles that had roosted up there for a couple of years. So
you're picturing like little things that can hang in trees or stand on posts?
Yeah, we want them to be things that can be post-mounted. We don't want to mount anything to the trees in the parks. We've got some guidelines that are out on our webpage, and it's things from finches and sparrows up to birds that nest on platforms. So robins use platforms, so do some hawks and owls. So we're looking at various ways to try and increase that kind of wildlife through our public park system. Yeah.
So if I build a birdhouse and I bring it into the competition, will it end up in a park somewhere?
Probably. The last part of this, we put the information out in January. There's a registration form that's out on our website, and we're asking that people bring their birdhouses into the Octagon Shop in March, between March 4th and 15th.
Okay.
And we will have an exhibit of all of the houses at the Octagon. We're having a show of birdhouses.
That's fantastic. And is that in the public gallery then?
Yes, it will be.
Okay.
It'll be in the public gallery. We're doing a show of birdhouses. We'll have it juried.
So
there will be awards given out to each of our different competition areas, as well as the opportunity for public voting for a favorite best in show.
Sure.
And we're going to announce that on Earth Day.
Oh,
the
that
winners.
Is so exciting.
And as part of that, during Earth Week, we're also working with the Octagon to do a speaker from SOAR to talk about the kind of bird environment and rescue birds.
Save our avian resources.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Then they rehabilitate injured birds.
They do.
And so we're looking at lots of opportunities just to raise awareness. There's a group of individuals in town who are very invested in bluebirds and creating and getting bluebird houses in around town. And we have some of their members involved. One of them is involved with our commission. So he's put together a bluebird house that we're going to put together and get out on the Ames public television station so that people can see that it doesn't have to be wholly artistic. Art isn't how you look at it. It's making it.
Mm-hmm.
So just the act of making this from scratch is creating a piece of art, even if it isn't painted up and dolled up and everything else on the outside. We want the insides to remain rough. We don't want them fine sanded and painted and everything else. It's not good for the birds to be able to build the nests and the little ones to they climb up to get out on what roughness occurs on the inside of the nest.
Exactly.
But the outsides can be wildly creative.
This is not only an art project. This is really for the birds.
Mm-hmm. this project is for the birds.
Okay, so no carpeting.
Yes, no carpeting.
That's true.
We've got some guidelines that we have out there on materials that we want used and things that we don't want used. For example, we don't want things that are going to dissolve. You can do a whimsical birdhouse and make it out of materials that are never intended to be put in the parks, because we are allowing entries of things. If you want to do it out of cardboard to make something very fun and creative with the intent, we will give it back to you after the show. We are only going to put in the parks the things that are good for the birds. We don't want things to go out there that are just going to then dissolve. This is Iowa. We get rain and wind and snow.
Right. And so, we don't want to create a maintenance challenge for our community either.
Right.
So is durability a factor in the judging of these birdhouses?
Not necessarily. It doesn't
have to
be. So
that's artistic merit.
That comes into artistic merit. We're sort of going to leave that up to the judges as they go through. We're working on pulling that panel together.
Any birds on the panel of judges?
No, not at this point.
That would be interesting. Even for somebody's pet parakeet to sort of be in front of all the houses and
determine which one.
Exactly. Exactly.
So we're excited about this. We've had a lot of interest. We've got lumber available for those who don't have access to it. Our email address is, again, on the Public Art Commission's webpage as part of the city. So we do have access if people need some lumber to be able to assemble these things. We've got that available. Mm-hmm. Email that, and we'll check that and get back to you. We're working with providing some birdhouse kits for our K through basically K through 8 schools and some of the preschools in town. So they're having teams of kids design what the outside of the birdhouse will get, and they'll put the birdhouse together, and then they will decorate them.
Oh, how nice.
So it's going to be a range of types and styles and artistic talent.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
The website is cityofames.org. Then under the Public Arts Commission there, you can find information about the Birdhouse Project, or you can just go ahead and email us at publicartscommission@thecityofames.org.
To get the guidelines.
All of our guidelines are out there then mm-hmm. on the website. The registration form is out there. We're asking people to complete that and turn that in with their birdhouse.
Beforehand.
You don't have to turn in a registration beforehand, but if you know you're going to turn something in, please email us and we'll get that on our list. So we're trying
prepared.
To get a sense of how many we're going to be prepared for.
I was speaking
how
with Carrie Dixon from the Ames Public Art Commission. And speaking of birds, starting a week from today, next Friday, will be the great bird count, the February bird count
yes.
for 4 days. Lots of fun.
People sort of peering over our backyard fences. We shouldn't be concerned. So
we're counting
just
birds.
We're counting birds. Yes. There
was
a unique thing that I wanted to bring up related to the birdhouses that sort of connects us then to another important hat that Carrie wears that I wanted to briefly touch on as well while we're talking on the radio today. There are some unique supplies that are being repurposed in order to be mm-hmm. offered for this birdhouse competition.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, we redid at the university with the Department of Residence, redid all of the fencing around the student apartments that are up at Shaletta and University Village. We didn't really want to throw all that cypress away. It wasn't really good for fencing anymore because, you know, like the bottom 4 or 5 inches was rotting away from being down on the ground. The top was falling apart, but they were still really nice boards. That's the wood that we're offering for individuals to reuse. And it's in about 3.5-foot sections. The pieces are about 6.5 inches wide. It's just perfect size for putting together birdhouses. And so that's some of the wood that we've got available. And again, it's the email us at publicartscommission@thecityofames.org, and we'll connect you with where we've got our wood and give that out for individuals. It's just a neat opportunity because we had all of this fencing that needed to be replaced, mm-hmm. but you don't want to just landfill it.
Absolutely.
So here
not.
We're giving it a second life, and it's still really nice cypress that
and
will.
Being construction material, it yep. wasn't optional or even alternative fuel for the resource recovery
nope.
plant. That would have been a construction demolition landfilling option. So we're so excited for
yep.
that. And speaking about sustainability, you have some pretty impressive numbers that I would really love to share. Carrie has actually looked back over the last 10 years. Of course, we're celebrating the 10-year anniversary of the Live Green Initiative at Iowa State. And Carrie looked back at some of her work related to sustainability, specifically related to sustainability in our design and construction services, our new buildings and our renovations. Tell us some numbers, Carrie.
In the past 10 years, we have added 1.7 million square feet of campus buildings that is a LEED certified on our campus. Within LEED, we track energy savings, water savings, how we divert the waste, recycled content, things like that are used to build and construct our buildings. And within the 29 projects that we have at Iowa State that are LEED projects, we're saving on average 9.5 million gallons of water a year through the efforts that are in those buildings to just slow down water consumption. It's things like lower flush toilets, lower flush urinals. A standard urinal uses like 1.1 gallons of water to flush a urinal. Well, for most people who know, urine is mostly water. You don't need to use that much water to rinse out a urinal. So we use a urinal that's a 1 pint of water flush. So it's a drastically reduces the amount of water, but it still
definitely.
Does the job of cleaning. So by reducing the university's consumption by 9 million gallons a year, we're helping the city of Ames because we're all using the same water source. And
sure.
so we're very conscious on the water that we use on campus and trying to make sure that we don't waste it. Also, these new buildings, they're designed to be more efficient than code. And on average, we're looking at $2.5 million in savings in energy cost if instead of them just being a regular designed to the code minimums for energy consumption by the state. We also have diverted over 21 tons of construction debris from going into the landfill in the projects that we've done. And that's really important for us because Story County doesn't have an environmental landfill anymore. So for Iowa State or anybody who's building in Story County, we have to take all of our waste over to Boone. And you have the joy on large construction projects. It's the joy of paying about an hour and a half of truck time because you'd have to drive over, wait in line, unload, and drive back. Hour and a half of labor time, and you pay twice the tipping fee because we are coming from out of county, out of the Boone County area. And once Boone County has started to look at if they decide whether they're going to increase or decrease as their landfill hits the
capacity,
end of the cycle,
sure.
capacity, mm-hmm. they then can tell the people who are coming from outside of their county they have to divert to other waste providers.
Right.
So that
sure.
means potentially trucking waste into Hamilton County or down to Metro East. So all of a sudden now your cost increases because you're going from an hour and a half to 3 hour turnaround time on these things.
And not to mention the environmental impact of just landfilling items that otherwise could be reused
right.
at a higher purpose.
We are so lucky in Ames because we have Manats here. They will take clean concrete. They will take clean asphalt as long as it doesn't have metal and other things in it.
Sure.
And they recycle it.
Sure.
It's a huge advantage that we have. When the Nappan Storms Towers came down about 10 years ago, all of the concrete from those two buildings did not go into a landfill as it normally would have.
Right.
That became roadbed and construction bed for the new dairy farm that was built south of town. And all of the steel that was used in those buildings was pulled out and recycled. Because that's two huge buildings worth of concrete.
Most definitely.
You know.
And currently we have – that is just so impressive. I mean, to think of those numbers and think of you know, where those items would have ended up, the impact that we would be having on our environment, our community, without considering these sorts of design and construction guidelines. And we currently have – is it 13 registered projects? I know we have a number of them in the wings,
too. We have 22 certified projects on campus. Two of them are LEED Silver and everything else is LEED Gold and two LEED Platinum.
Okay.
We lead in the state of Iowa among the region's institutions. We have 50% of the LEED projects amongst the region's institutions on our campus.
So 22 projects now?
Yeah, we're 22 completed projects.
Okay. Are they all certified?
They are all. That's the certified
wow.
ones.
Wow. Well, we've added some more since I looked
yeah,
recently.
Yeah, we've got seven that are in various states of certification process, either design, construction, or in the certification.
That's
so
fantastic.
We're doing really well.
Well, congratulations to everyone. This is very exciting.
Yeah.
And we're looking forward to the birdhouse.
I am excited to see the birdhouses.
Well, we have probably very little time left, but I wanted to make sure and mention that we have our annual Symposium on Sustainability coming up, and I really hope that everyone from the community can join us. It's a two-day event. It begins February 18th, which is a Monday, and we have our keynote speaker this year of Captain Scott Kelly. Now, Captain Kelly actually was very well known for having an identical twin, and then Captain Kelly was in space for a year. And it was very interesting to see the differences that he and his twin then had once he came back down from space. But another really interesting component that Captain Kelly will definitely be speaking on is from that vantage point, really seeing the impacts of global climate change. And so we're really excited to have him at Iowa State. And we've had such impressive response of his coming that we've actually moved that lecture to Stevens Auditorium. And so that will be at Stevens Auditorium at 7 p.m. Prior to that, starting at 5:30, we have a juried poster session and art show offering prizes for competition. This is for students. And that will be, now it's called the Goldfinch Room, used to be Celebrity Cafe at Stevens Auditorium. And then on February.
We need a house for that room.
Sorry?
We need a house for that room.
We do. Absolutely. That's a great idea. Then on February 19th in Memorial Union, we will be having some of the famous student activities related to sustainability. So we have our annual clothing swap, which is open to anyone in the public. You can bring clothes to swap. You can bring canned goods to donate and then pick up some clothing you might find or some cash donations as well to our student food pantry at Iowa State. That begins at 5 o'clock. We also have a couple of screen it yourself, hands-on activities, and we have some tabling by sustainability organizations, as well as posters related to sustainability highlights. And then finishing up at 7:30, we have brought a panel together to do a reflection of sustainability in the last 10 years and envisioning our next decade of sustainability. And this includes some former students who are now working in sustainability careers to talk about how sustainability is a part of their day-to-day lives. So we really hope folks can join us. More information is on our website, livegreen.iastate.edu.
livegreen.iastate.edu.
Yes.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Mary Rankin, Sustainability Director for Iowa State University, and Carrie Dixon, Sustainability Coordinator of Design and Construction at Iowa State University and member of the Public Art Commission. And you have been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host today, Ursula Rudenberg. Aladdin Al-Kathiri has been our engineer. Thank you, Aladdin. This show will be rebroadcasted at noon and 5 p.m. today. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris. Their CD, The Ballad of Kay Shelley. You also heard Vivaldi's Winter Concerto and Everyday People by Sly and the Family Stone. Thank you for listening, and remember that you, the listener, are what makes Local Talk meaningful and possible. And we will see you again on the radio.